Memorias de Guerra y Dignidad, presentado el miércoles en Bogotá por el Centro de Memoria Histórica. Los compañeros de Telesur con los detalles.
Entre 1958 y 2012 fueron documentadas 177.307 muertes en la población ajena al conflicto, al tiempo que cayeron más de 40.000 combatientes.
Este informe y los 20 volúmenes que lo acompañan, elaborados por el Grupo de Memoria Histórica y el Centro Nacional de Memoria Histórica, documentan la violencia sufrida por tantos y tantas compatriotas que en este país llevan décadas sin conocer un día en paz.
El documento refleja las acciones de la fuerza pública del Estado y de grupos armados y paramilitares contra civiles inocentes, registrando entre 1980 y 2012 16.340 casos de asesinatos selectivos, de los cuales 8.903 fueron responsabilidad de grupos paramilitares. Asimismo, se reportan 1.982 casos de masacres, con un saldo de más de 11.000 víctimas. La mayoría de estos decesos también recaen sobre efectivos paramilitares. Muchas de estas acciones derivaron en desplazamientos que superan los 4 millones de afectados, así como el asesinato de 1.190 indígenas y 1.431 casos de mujeres víctimas de violencia sexual en pleno del conflicto.
Yo pido justicia por todos estos daños causados durante 20 años. Yo no quiero que haya más impunidad en este caso, porque esto ha sido un genocidio lo que han hecho con los hijos de los sobrevivientes de la Unión Patriótica.
La documentación llevó al presidente Juan Manuel Santos a reconocer con contundencia:
debemos reconocer que tocamos fondo y que la guerra se deshumanizó y nos deshumanizó.
Basta ya. Colombia, Memorias de Guerra y Dignidad es un extenso informe de 431 páginas con miles de actores y millones de víctimas para que la sociedad colombiana conozca y ubique su grado de responsabilidad en una tragedia prolongada por más de 50 años.
La ciudadanía mexicana se opone a una reforma a la Constitución con el fin de privatizar la empresa estatal Petróleos Mexicanos, mejor conocida como Pemex. Esta fue una de las conclusiones de un sondeo realizado por la Cámara de Diputados de México. El diario La Jornada reporta que la mayoría de los encuestados consideró que, a pesar de la corrupción en la empresa y el sindicato petrolero, es preferible no permitir la inversión privada en Pemex, especialmente en aguas profundas, como pretende el gobierno de Enrique Peña Nieto. La investigación encontró que casi 70% de los encuestados consideró que el manejo de la empresa es poco transparente. Un 88% dijo que existe mucho o algo de corrupción en Pemex, mientras más de la mitad dijo tener una mala opinión del Sindicato de Trabajadores Petroleros que dirige Carlos Romero de Deschamps. Una amplia mayoría considera que el sindicato beneficia más a los líderes que a los trabajadores. Hemos llegado al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica. A nombre del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPad o en forma tradicional en kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
And you are tuned to the stream of free radio, freakradio.org. Normally at 101.3 FM when we're broadcasting, we are now streaming at freakradio.org. Go to that website, as you probably know if you're listening, unless you're listening on the archives, and click on the little red dot at the top of the transmitter, and you will catch our stream. Maybe we'll catch you, who knows. If you're listening on July 25th, Thursday afternoon, this is a live show. If you're not, you are catching it on the archive, and you're welcome to listen in. Coming up today, numerous interviews from the last couple weeks, possibly an in-studio guest. We'll see if the in-studio guest appears. She may or she may not. It's a little iffy at the moment. And there's also going to be some audio from the Trayvon Martin rally on Sunday in the march from Loudoun Nelson Center to the town clock and then to the county building. So stay tuned for that. You'll also be welcome to call in. Call-in number here is 831-427-3772. Again, 831-427-3772. You'll only catch something if it's the live show you're listening to, which will be on Thursday, the 25th of July, 2013. So you can call in any time with breaking news, of course, in the studio. We're interested in that. We are in pretty desperate straits as far as a transmitter goes at this particular date. I haven't heard of us experiencing any breakthroughs, although I have talked to a few people who say they have some ideas, but hopefully we'll see if they pan out. But we need your help out in the community because we have, as of yet, as far as I know, no site on which to put up our transmitter, and so that people who are traveling in cars or sitting around with radios, so they can hear us as well as folks on computers. And that happens only once we put our transmitter up, only once we find a place to do it. And we're looking for any place in and around Santa Cruz, except in the valley area and the very depths of the downtown, as I understand it. Although I've never quite seen a topographic map of Santa Cruz. I understand that on the outskirts, any high area, Big Tree, give us a, shoot us an email at freakradio.org. You can also email me directly at rnorris3@hotmail.com, which is the email I suggest people contact me on during the show if they have anything they want to brief me on or have me announce on the air or have me respond to or read their response or your response if you're listening and you do this to something I've said or something you've heard on the air or something that you've heard in a previous show. So let's begin with a little Annie DeFranco, and then we'll roll into interviews, and who knows, maybe a call or two, and I'll be with you until 8 o'clock, at which point I think we're going to get a probably a substitute host for Uncle Dennis's From the Cream to the Dregs. I think Uncle Dennis has gone fishing somewhere, not sure what he's up to, but I believe he's out of town, although he keeps threatening to come back into town, so watch out, or I should say listen out for Uncle Dennis.
Do you want to hear a song, a new song that didn't make the new album, or you want to hear... Okay. Okay, good. That was easy. I don't know why. I don't know what it did wrong. Fella been together about 7 years, so this is one of those little 7 year itchy songs. I'll send it out to all you that are been together for a while. Baby, if you like what you see, then make me feel nice. And baby, tell me with your eyes. Tell me in the glance of a hand. Let me know I still can make you feel like a man. Wipe away my things still do. There's flies in the kitchen, and I'm still in love with you. Yes, I'm still in love with you. Tell me some more of who you were before we met. Tell me a dream that you may or may have not had yet. For understanding, I will wait patiently. If I can unchain you on, I'll hold you till you're free. Yes, I'm still in love with you.
what you say, 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 say. Then make me feel nice. And baby, tell me with your eyes. Tell me in the glance of a hand. Let me know I still care. Make you feel like a man. Wipe away my worries, my list of things to do. Yes, there's flies in the kitchen, and I'm still in love with you. Yes, I'm still in love.
Yeah, that was CCC from Andy DeFranco's Buffalo, April 22nd, 2012 album. So, yeah, it looks like my my guest won't be coming in. She's not feeling well, and I wish her well. Tip of the hat to Linda LeMaster, Lighthouse Linda, as I call her, a longtime activist in the field of family support and homeless activism. She's under the weather, so even though the weather isn't as too bad today for some reason, it's could be worse. Pleasant summer day. Okay, just a couple of updates, or shall we say, I guess I'd call it a rumor or a bit of info gained from the street. I ran into Uncle Charlie, as I call him, on the street right before I came down to the studio, hanging out on Pacific Avenue. And I asked him what was happening, and he and his companion were very upbeat and optimistic, smiling and talking about good times. But then, as they kind of continued talking, they did mention, you know, there's ongoing harassment of homeless people by the police, a particular culture kind of on the cutting edge of the war against the homeless here, as one of them put it. And they then mentioned the deaths of, they called it the murders of two homeless men. One of them, Fat Freddy, if I have the name right. I may be mistaking it for the character in the comic strip from 30 or 40 years ago by Gilbert Shelton, the Furry Freak Brothers. But this guy was also known as Tom. He was, according to this source, killed. His body found on the footbridge near the Highway 1 bridge overpass, and the scuttlebutt that these two guys had was that he was set upon by five people, and I don't think they were witnesses. They're saying that it was street talk. Similarly, a guy called George, as they put it, was found near San Lorenzo, near the levee at San Lorenzo Park area, supposedly with a hypodermic needle near him, according to the police. But according to what one man told me also at the Red Church regarding this particular death, though his name, the name George, wasn't used that I remember, he wasn't a drug user at all. And so there's a general concern that this may have been an intentional killing disguised as some kind of drug overdose. Now, this is all rumor, and I have no idea. If anybody has any thoughts or information they want to give, feel free to call in. If you want to do it, I don't want to say it's necessarily more private, since who knows who's listening to anybody these days, but you can always leave me a call at 831-423-4833 or drop me an email at rnorse3@hotmail.com, rnorse3@hotmail.com, and I will either pass on the information or just simply sort of note it and assimilate it for my own future education. So that's kind of the little something I picked up on the way to the studio. Again, usually what I do is I let these people speak for themselves, because I can't verify these claims. I pass them on, and people should make their own decisions. I don't know. Again, if you want to call in with your own thoughts, if you've got any concerns about the upsurge of anti-homeless hostility, you can give me a call at 831-423-4833. Actually, I'll change that number. That's my home number. If you want to leave me a message, that's the place to use it. Try instead 831-427-3772. That's a better number because that one I'll actually answer. Assuming I'm going to actually not only see you appear on the board, but I will hear you. So give that a call. So I'm going to begin now with some interviews from the free meal at the Red Church. That's the Calvary Episcopal Church, which has a Monday feeding, 5 to 7, which has become significantly more modest in the last month with apparently the retiring of a staff member for the summer who kind of got burned out. Again, initially we've been told it was the death of such a person, but I think that was a confused account. And the meals have gotten a little bit more buff is a little strong, but supplemented. There's bagels and cream cheese. There's bagels and spread. There's coffee and drink, and there's salad. And I think there was another dish served on Monday. But it is true. It lacks the heartiness of a month or two ago. Food Not Bombs serves a great meal on Saturday at 4 o'clock near the town clock, and it's free, and it's vegan for those who are health concerned or have ethical concerns about eating meat. That's at 4 o'clock, across from the town clock, in front of the post office, actually, to be more specific, and it's there to be eaten. And then after that, it's usually a formal or informal gathering of Occupy Santa Cruz activists to share the latest news and blues, so to speak. So let's roll into the Red Church interviews from earlier this week.
Tell me, sir, what's happening?
I had a relapse.
And you're detoxing?
Yes.
From?
Alcohol.
And what are the primary problems you're facing as you do this?
Well, the shakes, and I am as ill as I can be. So.
You look like you're holding it together. Maybe it's just an illusion.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, if I could say anything to anyone, I would say use AA, you know, it helps me.
So you were, before you relapsed, how long were you without booze?
A couple of months. I mean, I'm Native American, so I've been brought up an alcoholic. So to be not drunk is not normal for me. So I'm working on being not normal.
You're being abnormal, in other words.
Yes.
We forgive you for that.
I'm also a veteran, but that hasn't got nothing to do with my alcoholism. It just helped me encourage it a little bit.
Do you get any assistance from vet services?
No.
Do they have any such assistance?
Yes, but last time, back in, I guess, 1980, I walked in there for a little loan, and they gave me a stack of paperwork to take a lawyer to figure out. I don't know what they do now, but it kind of...
That discouraged you.
Oh, yes. They took me to a war, and then they caused me to declare war. I won't have anything to do with them.
We've been talking with? If you wish to say.
No, I'd rather not. I mean, everybody's going to know me anyway. The police have been very kind. This you won't find, but they have been. They've been treating me with real respect, you know. I mean, so I have good things to say about the police department. And,
are you outside?
Yeah.
And where are you, I mean, are you sleeping downtown in the Poganev?
Woods.
And how is that? Any hassles for that?
No, it's been peaceful out there. I did get threatened by a dope dealer, but so far he's not followed through on his threats. You know, some of us, we got big mouths. If we don't like something, we open it. And sometimes you don't want to open them in that direction.
You complained about his professional activity or something else?
Yeah, I told him to get the hell out of the woods.
I see. All right.
So, I don't know that he's out there anymore, but he did make a real good threat towards me, you know, but it's all good. Life's about doing the right things, or trying to anyway, you know. If it ain't right, it ain't right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Free radio. We're not broadcasting. We're streaming. It is on slower speed now, slower speed. And it is about 6:20 out here at the Calvary Episcopal Church on the 15th of July.
I'm big, powerful, and nasty.
Here's a man who's bragging about himself here. Big, powerful, and nasty. What's your name, nasty man?
Boy.
Any recent examples of your big powerfulness or your mass nastiness?
Sadly, only in magic games.
Oh, I see. You're a card-playing kind of guy.
Yes, I am.
Any observations about the world beyond the card table?
It's been calm.
Oh, that's good. What about your...
calm. If it didn't feel...
eerily?
Like, eerily calm. If it didn't feel like a calm before the storm kind of calm... I think I'd be okay with that.
Right. Do you get a feeling something is coming?
Probably. It's Santa Cruz.
Thank you. We have a bit of news for us. What is that?
A new no loitering sign in one of the best parking lots to actually sit and smoke a cigarette.
Which parking lot is that?
That would be the Elm Street parking lot across from Cafe Pergolesi.
Oh, well, it's been illegal to linger there unless you have a vehicle or are walking through. You can't even linger if you're walking through.
It's a sad thing when you can't, you know, have a long conversation with a friend in a parking lot, you know, because you're walking with them to their car.
You know, you are constantly demanding things of our authorities that are completely unreasonable.
I believe they are so unbelievably unreasonable that, you know, basic human rights, they're very unreasonable.
And we've been talking to that man of unreason.
Void.
Thank you, Void. Any other comments?
I got nothing today.
Fair enough. Thank you. We have a criticism of one of our fine security forces. Your name, sir?
Fuck First Alarm. That's my name.
All right. F First Alarm. We'll try to be a little gentler.
Okay.
What is your problem with First Alarm?
Expletive deleted, expletive deleted, expletive deleted. So First Alarm.
You have a guitar. What have they done to you or for you recently?
They've done nothing for me but eyeballs. Like my kids, my skate kids, all the boys at the skate park, and they're just going way too far. I don't feel comfortable going to a park where there's security forces that have the power to call the cops on a whim, on an assumption of whatever, even if it wouldn't matter. And they just like try to shove people around, and they tell you there's rules on a spot when there's not. Like, for instance, I was smoking a cigarette on the bridge, which I was told during occupation time by the police that I could smoke cigarettes on the bridge there at San Lorenzo Park. Well, the security guard tried to tell me, you can't smoke there. He followed me all the way to the middle of the bridge. I said, okay, the cigarette's out. Now I'm taking it as a threat. I said, if you continue to follow me, I'm going to insert my Second Amendment privilege. And he turned around and he walked off. I said, it's my right. I said, I'm feeling you as a threat now.
You're a well-organized militia?
Well, no. It's not a militia. It's not just about a militia. That right to bear arms cannot be infringed, which means by the courts trying to take away our guns now, by the courts saying the mentally ill people can't have guns, all that stuff's crap. And if you're falling for it, you're falling for crap. Lies. No, research the law.
Thank you. And any other reports from the famous First Alarm security or insecurity?
Well, they're definitely... they like little boys, and they're all male, and that's kind of strange, because it's very strange. I'm not saying there's some secret perverse cult, I'm just saying there's some big perverse cult out in the open. So,
fair enough. We've been talking with...
expletive deleted First Alarm.
Or fuck First Alarm for short?
For certainly, yeah, for certainly.
Thank you, man.
Nice.
Man, I said, it could bother me in 1999 or something.
So you're a man who plays guitar on the mall.
Mandolin. Yeah.
Mandolin, sorry. Yeah. I've seen you there, so you haven't been driven away.
Nah.
And do the police and the hosts treat you with courtesy, respect, and love?
Tell me I'm a tourist attraction.
Well, there you have it. A positive report. They said it couldn't be done. How many hours a day do you play out there?
Two or three.
And how much in donations would you say you rake in?
Anywhere from $10 to $30.
And what's your most recent positive, negative, or interesting experience?
I helped some drunk girl get her. She couldn't figure out where she was, and I sat with her for 20 minutes and made sure she got her ride to where they'd know she was at. I have no idea who she was, where she came from, or how she ended up drunk.
You didn't attempt to exploit her in any way?
No, I had to hold her up and help her across the street while she threw up.
Wow. And we've been talking with?
Dave.
Thank you, Dave.
With that smoking woman, Jamie. How many cigarettes have you smoked today?
Actually, I'm quitting, so this is actually my third.
Your third cigarette?
My third cigarette today.
And how are you? You're living outside?
I'm actually in Scotts Valley.
And how is the Scotts Valley police treating you?
Oh, they're wonderful.
Do they come over and offer you coffee in the morning?
No, they come over and drink coffee.
And they look at you and drink coffee?
Yes, they do.
And are you alone or are you in company?
I'm in company.
And is that a big company or only one other person?
Oh, a big company.
And what's the impact of that? How many people are sleeping with you, so to speak?
Oh, geez, really? About 38?
Mamma mia. Can I join that group?
Anybody can join that group.
Yeah,
and
best-selling.
And how long have you been, are you in this group and up there?
6 months, actually, next week.
And are you always in the same spot?
Yep.
Do you have to reveal your location or not?
I
don't have to if you don't want to.
I'm at the Evolving Door. It's a sober living environment.
I see. So you're not really outdoors. You're indoors.
Yes. I had to get off the streets and indoors to get my son back, who was taken in from CVS.
And how old was your son when he was taken?
He was 4 in February. We were out here with all these guys. These are all guys. They're all my friends.
And on what basis was your son taken?
That we were in the shelter.
And what? You were in a shelter? Was there any other claim against you?
Negligence. We were at the armory, which was not a safe place for children.
So is your son still away from you?
Yes, he is.
And how long have you been separated from him?
6 months.
And his name is?
Tucker.
And is the claim that you are somehow a negligent mother?
Yes.
Are you a negligent mother?
I am not.
So they're a bunch of lying scumbags.
They are a bunch of lying scumbags.
How can you say that about our CPS?
Oh, I can say a lot more, but we'll keep it at that.
Any other? How many women you know have had their children taken away locally? Can you give any estimate that'd be realistic here?
Oh, now about 10, 15, countless. Yeah, personally that I know, maybe 10.
And how many of those takeaways were justified?
I'd say maybe one.
So you feel that the CPS is engaging in child theft?
I can't say that.
Kidnapping?
No.
Baby stealing?
No.
Minor snatching?
No minor snatching. I think that they're power tripping. There you go.
Okay.
Yep.
Any other thoughts or advice for moms out there?
Love your kids. All it takes.
Any way to avoid CPS other than have some money and be indoors? Fair enough.
Yep.
We've been talking with
Jamie.
Do you have any thoughts on this? You with the dictionary? You're shaking your head.
Musical Mike.
And before we go on to Musical Mike, let's hear a little more music from Ani DeFranco.
When I said, did you want to hear a new song that you never heard before, and you exclaimed like that was a super good thing, and it made me swell with love for you. Oh, dear listener, gluttons for the unfamiliar, inviters of mystery. I mean, I don't think you're typical amongst crowds of people. I think if you take your average crowd of people, they are coveting the familiar. They just want to feel something familiar and go to sleep. So anyway, I felt inspired to try to play you another new song that I might or might not know right now. Oh, fuck, I don't even know the bridge, so it's going to just be, it's just... I'll embrace the mystery with you. Okay. Yeah. make me say W, new paragraph, oh, new paragraph, W. Oh, my love of you. Your trouble, you. Make me ashamed to meet your mother, you. Oh, my love of you. You could get me in trouble, you. Yes, and as far as the eye can see, there is no other you. Oh, my love, you. Your trouble, you.
Was TRW. Yeah, TRW by Annie DeFranco. So you are tuned to the stream of freakradio.org, or free radio, and it's at freakradio.org. Listening to the show Bathrop Spears Broadsides. These are actually interviews from the Red Church area, the Calvary Episcopal meal on Monday that happened. I guess it's a week ago Monday now. Today is the 25th. It was the 15th. So, it's a week ago Monday. Let's hear a little more. And maybe something from folks out there, if they feel like calling in. 831-427-3772 is the call-in number. 831-427-3772.
Perform for us today, or any comments about the musical scene?
It's on inside. There's a blessed trio doing it up inside.
Now, I know it's been rumored that you fled the downtown because of, shall we say, undue police attention. Is this an accurate statement, or are the people joshing?
Still partially there, yeah.
And do you feel comfortable coming back downtown, or are you still waiting for a break in the police attention?
Well, it's pretty much same old. You know, you just got to roll with it and tuck and roll, or whatever they say.
You find yourself tucking and rolling downtown or elsewhere?
Well, I'm opening up my circle a little more. Thanks for asking.
Certainly.
And glad to have you out here keeping us...
keeping and the police informed of your activities, of course.
Yeah, thank you, Rob.
We've been talking with...
Open Mike.
Open Mike. Thank you, Mike.
Who I also call Merriweather Mike, or Musical Mike. He's a guy with a guitar and a happy attitude that won't quit, who I hear mostly by his friends, because he doesn't like to give it this interpretation, but for getting multiple tickets from police for being on Pacific Avenue. And you know, he kind of is a kind of a collection of things with him, doodads and stuff, paper flowers and, colorful items. I haven't seen him downtown much. I guess he tends to show up. I've seen him at a couple of the meals, I guess. It's, again, part of the destruction of the street culture downtown by the crackdown with security guards, police, and ununiformed vigilantes. Let's hear some more from the 15th of July at the Red Church.
Any comments from you, sir?
No, I'm fine. We have been listening to the non-comments of... I've been listening to Michael.
But you are...
Oh, I'm Zoran.
Thank you, sir.
We're talking with...
Dreamcatcher.
Dreamcatcher, you say you've heard both good and bad things about First Alarm?
Yeah, they've been treating me real good, but, you know, I'm not one that gets upset when I get woke up like I'm supposed to. I'm all right with that. Some people aren't. Somebody said they got kicked in the face. I'm not sure about that or not, but I don't think First Alarm's kicking anybody in the face. You know, they're pretty respectful, and I know all of them. And it's like, hi, Dreamcatcher, how you doing? You know, it's really nice. So if there is any negativity going on out there, I'm meat and cheese and mustard. Meat and cheese and mustard bagel. Okay. There you go, Robert. I just wanted to say that, you know, it's not all bad out here.
And we've been talking with?
Dreamcatcher.
Thank you, Dreamcatcher.
You're welcome. You're welcome, sir.
We have a man who can actually identify every human being on my, or many of the human beings on my T-shirt, which, of course, features some Native Americans making one of their last stands. What's your name, sir?
Ian McKay.
And Ian, what do you make of this T-shirt?
Well, I love it. Homeland Security, fighting terrorism since 1492. Talking about our sense of security and terrorism.
Yeah, the T-shirt he's referring to is actually one I'm wearing this afternoon at the show. It's a picture of... I guess it's four famous Native Americans with weapons, guns, and underneath it says Homeland Security, fighting terrorism since 1492. Of course, being called the terrorists as they do. Ian is one of the main organizers of the Red Church Shelter Program, or actually it's the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, but I think it was initially activated by, well, certainly Joel Miller and the Red Church staff were a significant part of that initial push, and they shelter about 20 people a night, six nights a week, not at the Red Church, but at a variety of churches, in the face of some criticism and hostility from the community around them, particularly out at the Circles Church, where I haven't been out, gosh, in quite a while, but I've heard that the Circles Church, which allows people to park in their parking lot, has been getting criticisms and concerns from neighbors. I haven't interviewed the neighbors. I don't know if they're legitimate or illegitimate. I tend to be suspicious about criticisms of, and also I'm more of homeless people in their vehicles, simply because often these are criticisms that involve there being an eyesore or making folks nervous or worrying the children or worrying the mothers about the children. And if you actually begin to look at the police reports of actual criminal activity other than activity that's survival activity, such as sleeping at night, that has been made into a de facto crime, you don't find much. At least that was the case in Palo Alto, which I'm probably going to play a little something from soon. I've got some of those tapes I've been bringing to the studio and not playing because I haven't had enough time. Back to the Red Church 2 weeks ago or a week and a half ago.
How about the terrorism against Native Americans? The war we fought to destroy their culture and their people and rob their land.
Well, we were the superior white race, after all.
I wouldn't go so far as to say superior in any form. I'd say we were kind of just the opposite.
Murderous dogs who were seizing property?
Well, I don't think I'd go quite that far, but I would say that we did a lot of immoral things, even by the standards of that period.
We being individuals many generations ago who...
Of course.
I want to make sure you weren't involved recently. In any...
I'm not quite that old.
You have a very distinguished look about you, though.
I'm not 125 plus years.
So you have been working with the ISSP program here, which shelters 20 people six nights a week.
I do.
How's that going?
It's going rather well. We're trying to get our seventh church together so we can close the ring, and then we can replicate ourselves in other parts of the county to widen the need for homeless community in regards to a safe place.
Safe lack from vigilante neighbors?
Well, the Take Back Santa Cruz community is made up of many different types of people. Some of it is misguided. Some of it has some points that I think people should think about, and everything in between. There's no black and white. This shades of gray for everybody. And I think what we have to do is try to sit down to educate people on the issues of homelessness in our communities, and at the same time to calm the fear that some people have about homelessness. If we do that, most people would say, well, they're just like you and me, and they need help and support. And instead of having hatred and fear, they would be more apt to be willing to help, whether it be through their churches or any other method.
You don't want to help them, just help them out of town.
Well, no, that's not the right way. That's another form of dislocating people.
And we've been talking with
Ian McKay.
Thanks, Ian.
Bye.
Talking with Becky Johnson.
Yeah, I learned that there was an unintended consequence of the smoking ban downtown, where they banned smoking tobacco on Pacific Avenue, and that is that since no one can smoke on Pacific Avenue, they all go in front of Next Space and smoke, which of course is run by Jeremy Nooner and Ryan Coonerty.
I don't think to smoke them out, perhaps.
I don't think so. I think they just got a little whiff of their own business.
Fair enough. Any other reports?
Not at this time.
Thank you. We're talking with that man without a vehicle and perhaps without rights, Robert Brunette. Hey, Robert.
Hi, how's it going?
Well, I have my vehicle still, but you don't. What's going on with that?
I don't know. Maybe homeless people aren't allowed to have vehicles.
Well, you obviously can't be trusted,
for sure.
But I understand you have been getting some advice from Steve Plaich on how to reclaim your vehicle by seeking an order to show cause or why your vehicle is being held or whatever.
Yeah, a little bit. I've been doing, you know, my own research on it, and I kind of know what I need to ask for, but exactly what to ask for is the hard part, you know.
Have you sat down with Steve and simply worked out the wording? Because I think he might be willing to do that.
Oh, no, I haven't. Just mostly what kind of order I need. I've been talking with him, you know.
I think
the wording might be nice to, you know.
And then just get the damn thing in and take the next step, whatever that is.
Yep.
Because I understand you've been treated, we talked about this earlier, rudely. But
well, like I said,
it's not abusively, but the California Highway Patrol in the hearing itself,
yeah,
which wasn't really a hearing. It's like more of a get-the-fuck outing.
Interrogation.
Right.
Like, see how he could, you know, what charges could he grasp straws upon?
Also, bring witnesses with you is another good thing to do.
Yeah, it could have helped. I don't know. There wasn't a lot of witnesses, but, you know.
One witness would be helpful, and a tape recorder would be good, too.
But I got to kind of interrogate him to see what his real underlying issue was.
You can try, because he might not say anything at all, but, yeah, yeah. At least have somebody observing what goes on and have a record of what goes on, like a tape or an audio.
Yeah.
Or a video.
Well, I told him he should record it, and he didn't feel that.
Oh, no,
recording.
You have to record it. He's not going to do shit for you, man.
Well, they're supposed to, as a hearing officer, record it at the request.
He's supposed to be fair, and he's supposed, you know, and all that stuff.
Be unbiased.
California Highway Patrol, very few positive things to say about them. On the other hand, I tend to have as few experiences as possible with them.
Well, most of the time they were, you know, all right with me, but then this last few times, you know, because all the
stole your house, your property, and your rights, which is a minor detail, of course.
Well, different governments have took their turns, taking everything till I have nothing. But, you know, it seems like homeless people don't have a right to even get their vehicle back, because when you're homeless, they have no address to serve you at for the lien sale. So they'll say, oh, well, you're homeless, you have no address, we can just continue with the lien sale because we can't notify you in person.
I hope you're going to find a way around that, because I think there probably is if you take the initiative to, you know, well, I'm not sure, obviously, but proceed, and we want more details. I suggest, though I don't always...
try to get writ this week and just kind of trumpet, I guess, you know.
Let us know what happens.
I will, yep. I think I'm ready to write it out tomorrow. Can't drag my feet last couple of days. I don't know.
I appreciate that.
Together, I know what to do, but I just having a hard time, you know, just doing it.
I didn't do it. You did.
Like they say, just do it, right? Don't think about it too much.
And we've been talking with Robert Brunette.
Thank you, Robert.
And Robert, again, I have only his account, described how he was harassed by neighbors for parking his vehicle in their neighborhood. He lives in his vehicle, as I understand it. And he had his vehicle got towed improperly, and he went to a vehicle hearing, and he was ordered out of the hearing because the hearing officer, who's a California Highway Patrol officer apparently, he discussed it at some length. I guess the nub of it was that the hearing officer wanted to accuse him of having fraudulent plates, license plates, because he came from out of state. He explained the laws, and the officer backed down from any kind of charges. And given, you know, obviously I didn't talk to the Highway Patrol, hear what their side of the story was, but by Brunette's account, he was treated very abusively, thrown out. And again, my suggestion, when anyone faces a hearing, whether it's before a judge or before an administrative officer, or if you're just going in to make a complaint at an agency, bring somebody with you to observe what goes on, to kind of cool down the situation, to be a witness, as I said, it can be important. And I think having a tape recording of what goes on is also appropriate. I mean, if you're having a dealing with a government official, it's completely appropriate because it makes a good record of what went down, so that in case either party has any questions or there's any dispute about the facts, about what was said, there's this recording. Often, of course, government officials don't want you to do this, both because they're nervous about their personal privacy, you know, maybe it seems an unusual policy to them, or because they don't want to be held accountable. They enjoy a position of some insularity. And often government officials do have their own video or tape recordings, particularly if you're a police officer. You know, they just don't want you to have your side of the story there because it makes it easier for them to claim their account, whatever will eventually come out of it, is the accurate one. Or such is my my cynical view, and also it's good not taking the risk. Let's hear some more from the Red Church.
So I did arrive late at the Red Church, and the singing, as you may have heard in the background, was going on, and there were, I'd say, several dozen people gathered on the sidewalk on the lawn. The numbers seemed to be growing a bit, probably were even larger before I arrived. And some of the old-time activists you heard, Becky Johnson is here, Colin Campbell Clyde, David Silva is also here, of course, Steve Plaich, and Alan Nunez, or is it Munez, or is it Mooney Wooney? Who can tell? I'm never clear.
Over here at the park.
We're talking with
Danny.
Danny, you say that there's been a falling accident?
Yes, Nicky fell. You know, he decided that he's going to be a little courageous and climb a tree. So he climbs a tree over at the park,
right,
and he falls out of it.
Yeah.
After he's being talked down.
How tall, how far up in the tree was he?
I'd say about 15 feet.
And he fell 15 feet?
Smacked his head, I guess.
Oh, boy.
Hit his butt bone. I mean, I don't know how bad it is. I haven't heard the word yet, but I figure I'm going to get the word here tonight.
Possibly so.
I would think so. This is my buddy.
Not that I necessarily know Nikki, but
this is my buddy, and Nikki has been out here on the streets for a long time. And there's nothing bad to say about the fella. I mean, he comes up and if I need a dollar, man, he's right there, you know? If I need something, if he needs something, I'm right there for him too.
How are he or you being treated by the police?
I just got out of jail.
For?
5-hour tour, drunk in public. I probably deserved it, but you know what?
Were you able to take care of yourself?
Well, I hit my butt bone twice, my tailbone.
Last night or when?
No, dude, within the last month. And
Did the police ask you if you
want?
No,
they got all my stuff, and you know what? I think it's a good thing that they have my stuff because I don't have to push nothing. I don't have to carry nothing. All I need is a blanket right now.
And you think that they have it secure?
I think they did me a damn favor.
So you think you'll be able to pick it up, or you don't care?
Oh, yes. No, no. I can leave it in there till the first of the month till I get a storage unit, and then I'm doing my right thing. See, I'm putting my money into something. I got one in Sacramento, and my plan is this. We want to move the fuel rods from Diablo Canyon to Rancho Seco in Sacramento, and in the process, I'm going to have two secured facilities, and I'm stockpiling women's clothes, children's clothes, all kinds of musical instruments, all kinds of stuff.
Sounds like an ambitious project, but don't get radioactive while you're at it.
Well, I already am. I'm going to back off.
I don't have my Geiger counter with me. We've been talking with
Danny.
Thanks, Dan.
And though it sounds a little wild and crazy, to say the least, to me, it's an interesting point that it sounds like some people, not having storage facilities, perhaps being afraid of having their stuff stolen, or just getting tired of being moved from place to place, although he didn't say that was his situation, but he said he was tired of pushing stuff around, would prefer to have the police hold their stuff and use the police as a de facto storage center, just as the jail may become a de facto homeless shelter, as it's already become, some say, and certainly in some cities, a de facto psych ward because of the defunding of these other institutions. And out of the Homeless Lack of Services Center on Coral Street, at 115 Coral Street, or the Homeless Service Center, as they call themselves, they, of course, have, as far as I know, not replaced the lockers that they tore out some years ago with the intention of... I was told they hadn't yet decided whether to put in the lockers or to put in administrative offices, but people need storage facilities. I mean, you know, if you're homeless... I don't know, it's pretty elementary. I don't think it needs to be stressed or reiterated. You're tuned to the Stream of Free Radio, in case you just wandered in sat down at your computer and turned us on. If you're listening on July 25th, you can call in and actually talk to me now live on the air, and that is, the number to use is 831-427-3772, 831-427-3772. If you're not listening live, thank you for listening anyway. If you have any questions, feel free to email me or get in touch with me by phone at 831-423-4833. This is the HUFF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom line, 423-HUFF. And the email is rnorse3, I'm Robert Norse myself, at hotmail.com. And that's just about the truth. So, back to the Red Church.
These are all interviews at the Red Church, and it's now about 7 o'clock, and I'm heading down to Pacific Avenue.
Robert.
Hey, how you doing?
Well, perhaps that's it for the Red Church. So let's say goodbye to the Red Church. And let's say hello to, here's a show that I did on, during the marathon for community TV. I recorded the audio off it, thinking it might be interesting to play at some point. It's already been heard and seen by the people who saw the marathon, which raised $1,000. Steve Plaich was one of the three people who were raking in the money, and Spilly Chili was kind of the master of ceremonies. It was his feeling that if they raked in enough money, they were trying to get $2,000, they might be able to coax the board of stupid vipers, supervisors, as they call themselves, to return more of the management capabilities to the community TV studios. I believe the problem they're having is they're being forced to not just cut back in terms of expenses, but there's even more significant cutbacks, which I think may be discussed in this kind of audio side of the video, which it's a live show, but I captured the audio part of it. I'm going to play that now, and here we go.
Hey,
you can tell, I have Mr. Robert Norris, Santa Cruz's most illustrious anarchist, as we like to call it here. And
that's something I never call myself, particularly, don't know, you know, I'm pretty hostile toward oppressive government, and I'm sympathetic to revolutionary movements, but would I call myself dogmatically this or that? I don't think so.
I just love Robert dearly. You know, he's been on my show a few times, and when we said we were doing this, he just really wanted to come down and be a part of it. So, Robert, what's going on in Santa Cruz?
Well, there is a benefit coming up, which I wanted to plug, for the Santa Cruz 11. That is the four of them who D.A. Bobley is still spending your money to go after. These are the people who wanted to expose the banksters at Wells Fargo, some of whom were reporters, some of whom were simply people going through the building, like the former city council member Catherine Byers. They're still being pursued, and there's going to be a benefit in their defense, 2 to 5 on July 5th. That's Friday at 535 Spring Street, I believe.
And that actually was a successful benefit, though most of the money went to the sanctuary camp. Brent Adams, who's one of the Santa Cruz 11, the four remaining charged with unlawfully being in a bank building, and it's not just a trespass charge. They're claiming that any vandalism done on the building is the responsibility of the people who happen to be there at any time, regardless of whether they were responsible for the vandalism or not. It's a very nasty form of attack on a political protest, which was concerned with exposing Wells Fargo, opening up community space for homeless people for the winter. This happened in December, actually in November and early December of 2011. And most of the people charged have had charges dismissed by the judge when it became clear that there was prosecutorial misconduct. Actually, that's was clear to everybody except the judge. I got to be clear there. Judge Burdick didn't find prosecutorial misconduct justified dropping the charges, though he did for the first time sanction DA Rebecca Young, who is the sole DA handling these 11 cases, which showed really, in a sense, how unseriously the district attorney's office took these cases. It was simply it seemed like a sign of a sop or a token move to justify the police department's losing face and to, pat Wells Fargo on the back, appease conservatives in the Santa Cruz community. I'm speculating. I don't have, internal documents that show any of this. In any case, they are still going to trial in September unless the district attorney wises up, and I doubt he will. Bob Lee has never been very wise on this issue, and I think he's committed himself and committed his. He doesn't want to lose face on the issue. But other prosecutions of similar circumstances in different cities nationwide have either resulted in the dropping of charges or juries finding people not guilty, and at least in a couple of cases in the last 3 or 4 months. And I'm not terribly optimistic because I'm not optimistic about what a jury is likely to conclude given the kinds of strictures that they face in a criminal case when the judge has tight control over the case and the DA is usually has a much more competent and well-funded staff than the defense, particularly for poor people. In the case of the Santa Cruz 11, they've been more fortunate because there were seven attorneys, admittedly some of them, it's a little harsh to say crappy court-appointed attorneys, but let's say less than industrious court-appointed attorneys. I wouldn't call them top of the line. Court-appointed attorneys, public defenders, have a lot of trouble because they are swamped with cases, but also because they're part of a system that really it operates by plea bargaining and essentially, one might say, selling out or persuading defendants to sell out and plead to charges on the presumption that they'll be found guilty even if they're not. And this is based upon a false elevation of the credibility of police officers and the exclusion of people from juries who are willing to throw out laws that are unconstitutional, like drug laws, that have no business putting people in jail or in deciding that something is an unjust situation, and because it's unjust, they'll just not vote to convict. Juries actually can do that, and they don't have to explain what they're doing. It's called jury nullification or jury independence, but defense attorneys are not allowed to tell them that they can do that. More information on that, go to FIJA, FIJA, www.fija, I think it's .org or .com. It's the Fully Informed Jury Association. They've been kind of beating that horse for about 20 years. I was very impressed with it when I first came across their literature. I still think it's relevant. I don't know how successful they've been. They've been able to. It used to be in the state constitutions of a number of state governments that the jury is the judge of both the facts in a case, whether facts are true or false, but also of the law itself. If they decide the law is wrong, they can decide in that case not to convict, even if it is the law. And the judge can't say, you have to follow the law, or the judge can say what he wants. But the public defender, the defense attorney, used to be able to say this law is, you know, been abusively treated by the prosecution, and it's, you know, going to result in a huge sentence. You're not allowed, for example, now to tell the sentence, the length of sentence that a person is going to get to the jury. So they don't really know what they're going to be putting the defendants through. So it's a difficult situation for the four defendants who are coming up for trial, and I'm rooting for them. And they have a website which you can go to, which the way to find it, it's got a kind of a complicated address because somebody dropped the ball and the old SantaCruz11.org website got put aside. Maybe it can be reclaimed. There's some confusion there. But if you want to find the current website for the Santa Cruz 11, go to Google, and you have to really go to Google. You can't use Bing. I try not to use Google because it's... I was informed they were hostile to Assange and WikiLeaks, and I don't want to contribute to groups that are in that way, although I no doubt I do to some groups, because I tend to use mainstream stuff still. But if you Google for home, H-O-M-E, home, and then Santa Cruz 11, all separate words, I think you'll find the new website, which Steve Plaich has put up. Thank you, Steve. Steve Plaich is also, he appears at the Red Church every Monday and does, he will both give you a bagel and, if you can slow him down, which is sometimes difficult, get a bit of legal advice, and he'll arrange to talk to you later, perhaps, if he can't talk to you then. His number is 466-6078, if you want to reach him. He is often accessible by phone, and in the past he's been quite forthcoming about giving accounts on free radio. In fact, I think I'll just give him a call right now and see if we can actually get his attention and maybe get his update and his reports. Perhaps he's available for a chat. Hello? A little ringing there. There we go. Steve hasn't been terribly,
your call has been forwarded
terribly forthcoming
to an automatic
in answering
voice
calls
message
recently.
System.
But
Steve Plaich
is not available.
But we'll leave
at
him a message
tone,
and perhaps
he'll
get in touch.
Please record your message. When you have finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Hey, Steve, this is Robert Norris calling in. It's free radio time, or I should say freak radio stream time. And looking for an update if you want to catch us between 7 and 8. Don't abandon us, even if we don't agree on all things, and I can be critical of some of your roles, Mr. ACLU guy. Get in touch. Tell us what's happening, and... hey, we'll learn more. Call the studio 427-3772 if you want to be on the air. So we'll see if anything comes out of that. And let's get musical for a moment. And who knows? Maybe someone else will call in. Perhaps you, 427-3772.
Okay, good people, it is time for your radical feminist poetry interlude. Aren't you glad? Aren't you just tick? Don't you feel tickly inside? Okay, good. All right, so this is a poem I'm still working on, as you can see. It's a bit of a mess here, but I'm gonna try to just do you a version and see if, you know, see if I'm on the right track. See if you're still standing here at the end. Okay. Yeah, thank you. All right, okay, so, and what better place than this house of worship? all right, together at our river's source, two streams join with equal force, and then naturally find their course from all the froth and the churning. First comforting, then haranguing, nature forever yinning and yanging, the annual pots and pans a-clanging, and with each turn, learning. Together at our river's source, two streams join with equal force, but the water will change its course if one should surge ahead, and in the fundaments of religion, behold the patriarchal vision to take creation away from women and bid us pray to the Father instead. Yes, just because the truth is written and the writers of history smitten don't mean an opposite truth ain't hidden and the way still quite unclear. Yes, cooperation trumps competition as an engine of evolution. And if I were Darwin's girlfriend, I would whisper that in his ear. From single cell to multi-cell, that giant step, the ringing bell. Everything since then, just drinking from that well. Community is what we are. I am a great noisy metropolis of cells working together to coexist, and on my tallest building an antenna that is tuned in to the stars. Yet look at the leaders of nations, at the architects of social relations, at the distorted manifestations of the world of the humanoid. So many glorious inventions, triumphs too numerous to mention, and yet we've lost our true intention. It's been cast into the void. Give the witches back their brooms. Give the weavers back their looms. Chase the elephant from the room at long, long last. And send some scouts ahead upriver. Heed the messages they deliver. And while the moon is still a sliver, try not to move too fast. It will be a slow unwinding of these ties that have been binding from a masculine that's been blinding to a pulsing give and take. It will be a slow reinvention of our underlying intention till relationship and connection be the thread we daren't break. My body is your body. No such thing as separation. It takes a quantum explanation to explain what mothers know. And by all means, pursue your science, celebrate your many triumphs, but know the wheel is always turning, whether or not you say it so. Women, you must do nature's bidding with a force that isn't kidding, when all the pain we've been forbidding comes back brutal and divine. Women, you must face the terror, be the feeder, be the bearer. Women, please don't make the error of just falling right in line. Let us all go back to college, grow the shadow side of knowledge. Let's collectively acknowledge the elephant in the room. You know, peace is born of balance, and the 21st century challenge is to rename God our mother and spaceship Earth her fertile womb.
And that's a new poem by Annie DeFranco, and that's what it's called, New Poem. So back to the Spilly Chili Marathon, which, as I said, netted some money for community TV. I haven't really gotten an update from Spilly on what that means for community TV. We talk about it a little bit in this fundraising pitch, and I'll play a little bit more of it and interrupt it on occasion if it seems to be. I can make some contemporary comments. The Sanctuary Santa Cruz 11 benefit, which Brent almost single-handedly got together. It just, he's an amazing ball of energy, and he does great flyers, and he's very devoted to this cause in spite of this ongoing criminal prosecution he has to face of establishing a sanctuary cabin. He's very, very insistent that it's something that can be done and should be done and will be done. I've seen similar efforts in the past, and I'm not as optimistic as he is. He had a meeting last night at the Grange, and I'm going to actually try to give him a call to get an update if he wants to tell folks what came out of that, how it went. If anybody else went to that meeting at the Grange and want to discuss how that went down, feel free to give a call, 427-3772. Now let's get back to a marathon a couple weeks ago at Community TV trying to essentially save payment for the staff, I believe. The plan is just to pay for all the equipment, but all the volunteer staff is going to get dumped, or something along those lines.
I mean, I'm all for community TV. I think that it's really an important thing to have. Like, I'd love to see the community TV staff threaten a strike if the Board of Supervisors insists on continuing its tight-fisted and restrictive policies, or perhaps it's your Board of Directors. I'm not sure who's doing it. We've talked about this a bit before, Spilly. I've got a whole list of things here I can go through.
Well, what's on the top of your list, my friend? Well, you know, what's going on? Is it the guy's getting his head beaten in, or is it they're trying to get rid of some more services to our friends?
It's all happening. I mean, the same kind of, I would call it a police cover-up of the incident involving Officer Vasquez and Richard Hardy, the man who you've seen perhaps on the video, dropped face down onto the sidewalk in handcuffs. Still no report from the Santa Cruz Police Department.
How long ago did this happen?
I think it was April.
I know it's been a while now.
Been a while, yeah. And I mean, it's, you know,
are they just hoping for it to go away and people
police
forget?
The department rarely gives you any real information. We don't have any kind of independent oversight, really. We have a guy called Bob Aronson, who's a police auditor, but he doesn't even give a written report each year. He gives once a year a verbal report to the city council. We don't have any way of checking the police, except for the citizens. People out there with the video cameras are the check.
And there's still been no response from the police department, no conclusion to the investigation into Officer Vasquez's treatment of Richard Hardy. And that's, I think that's very telling. Or if there has been a response, the Sentinel hasn't covered it. I'm surprised if, well, maybe I shouldn't be surprised. I certainly haven't heard anything about that. And admittedly, I haven't put in a specific request to the police department for updates, but I kind of think I would have heard of something. I did talk to Richard, and I interviewed him. I may have played his interview on the air. I think I have. He is a very sort of mild-mannered guy. You know, in the video, I think he appears clearly intoxicated and not particularly cooperative. And it could well be, I think he does not feel that Vasquez slipped. He felt it was intentional. I think he's getting an attorney to try to do some kind of, seek some kind of damages and recompense, which not only is an advantage for him, but hopefully is an advantage for all of us, which would require the police department to have closer check on and less tolerance of that kind of abuse. It sounds like there was a lot of tolerance of this kind of stuff. Or at least I haven't heard. I mean, there should have been some response to the investigation, some comment by the mayor or the city council. Nothing, of course. But then again, Richard Hardy is a homeless guy who I ran into at the Red Church in line for food. Back to Spilly Chili at the Community TV Marathon.
Right, and that's such a great thing that we have this resource now, folks. You have your little iPods and cell phones and things that do videos, and it's not hard if you see some misjustice going on to fire up your little camera and videotape that, because you could save somebody's life. You really could. You know, they can turn things and turn it around and frame you for murder, even if you didn't even blink an eye at the scene. So
yeah, I mean, video has been very important. For example, the Ken Collins video of the guy who, with the Clean Team, was, you know, harassing homeless people on the Clean Team with, what's her name, Robinson, the city council member. I'm the same.
Now, what is the Clean Team? That's the people.
Clean Team is a group of people who originally started by T.J. Magallanes to essentially identify toxic spots, places where that needed to be cleaned up, whether it's because there are huge amounts of discarded camping material or stuff left by tourists or people, whatever it was. And the city has been essentially, it was in TJ's view, not dealing with this. A group from Take Back Santa Cruz took over the Clean Team and turned it into an anti-homeless drive, a drive involving needle hysteria, shut down the needle exchange in the city, and has essentially taken over the city council as a kind of right-wing reactionary agenda that is going after homeless people as the crime menace. You see this in their public the Safety Citizen Task Force, or the Public Hysteria Task Force, as I call it.
Well, now, how are they creating this hysteria? They got control of the media? How are they actually causing all this?
There's a large number of people who come to city council who are really concerned about the unresponsiveness of city council to such things as cleanups, as concerns of in the neighborhood of different kinds, and they bring along, this is what they're doing several months ago, cans full of needles, and they shake the needles at the city council and at the television cameras, not missing the point that 250,000 needles were safely disposed of through needle exchange last year, and this involved less than 1,000 needles. So you've got this, you've got...
That's a little unclear, but the Clean Team found about 1,000 needles, less actually by their accounts, although more by T.J. Magallanes' accounts when he spoke with me. But the needle exchange has taken in 250,000 per year, so that's just a small fraction. And when you have people scouring the area looking for needles, you tend to find more. I know one person who I suggest that the needles are being seeded by for political purposes by some of these right-wing groups. I have no evidence of that. And so, I know that's the suspicion of at least one of my activist friends. But suspicion is one thing, and you know, reality can be another. So, there is this KSCO talk show host who I had a debate with briefly at the city council courtyard when Take Back Santa Cruz led a march to the city council, and the city council actually abandoned its evening session in order to have a schmooze session with Take Back Santa Cruz March, which had a lot of people there. I think there were 100, 200 people. And I'm glad when the city council gets out to talk to the community, but doing so around a group with this particular agenda did not make me feel very comfortable on that regard. And anyway, I talked to this guy... who's the talk show host of KSCO, who was running around interviewing people. He and I had a little bit of a debate. He somehow feels needle exchange not only doesn't get people off, you know, drugs, which it doesn't claim to, or and as a menace, because needles get left in neighborhoods and children go step on them, although that is extremely rare in Santa Cruz history. I think I've heard of three instances, two of them brought up by the Clean Team and Take Back Santa Cruz. And not that it's, you know, not a crisis, even if only a psychological crisis for the person that happens to. It's not, I don't know about the stats about how frequently dirty needles that have been left around are actually, even if you get stuck with them, are a health menace. I think it's more if it happens when the blood is active. You know, if you share a needle, or if you get pricked by somebody and you're a hospital worker. That was my sort of understanding talking to some needle workers. But it's an ongoing issue which has been pumped up and hyped big time. And again, needle exchange is still closed in the city. and you don't hear anything about it now that it's been shut down, you know, and it's likely, according to Steve Plaich and other people who claim to know more about this than I do, to result in a year from now, you'll see an upsurge in hepatitis and HIV. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Is this Free Radio?
I think so. Yeah, this is Free Radio. Yeah, this is the studio.
I heard good things about Free Radio.
Well, we're not really Free Radio. We're free, streamy, weamy, on the web kind of thing now. But
there you go. That's good enough.
Is this the infamous Steve Plaich, much maligned by certain parties?
The very same. I'm actually in between meetings, so I thought I would give my good friends at Streaming Free Radio a call.
Well, you are always to be commended for sticking your head in the dinosaur's den, so to speak.
Well, we did what we can. We do what we can, unfortunately, with the proposal to open the ACLU meetings up to the public from start to finish was just voted down. In fact, I couldn't get any support. The only support I got was from board member Jacqueline Seidel, who said that, well, how about as an alternative, we have oral communication at the beginning of the board meeting. I thought that was a poor substitute, but that's what prevailed.
Wow, what do you attribute this feeling to, Steve? Because you and I were at least three meetings in the last year where not only were the meetings open to the public, but people sat around the table in almost on an equal status with ACLU members. I mean, the board members, you know, obviously took precedence, but members of the public were treated with respect. They were, you know, they were acknowledged. And that wasn't just when you were the chair. It was when there was another chair as well. This policy suddenly seemed to change. Or is my memory incorrect?
No, your memory is not incorrect, and frankly, I don't understand it. My point was that, you know, the previous meeting had been completely open to the public. I thought that everybody, you know, was polite, was considerate. Everybody had an opportunity to speak when the opportunities arose. I saw no reason why it shouldn't be, you know, completely open and transparent. And having said that, there was much disagreement around the table from people who said, well, you know, we're not an open meeting. Well, you know, what if people are obstreperous or interrupting? And I said, well, that just doesn't happen. Why are you, you know, suggesting that's going to happen when history and recent events would suggest that it doesn't happen?
Hmm. Now, I know that you have been instrumental in putting people on the ACLU board who you feel might be more sympathetic to local civil rights concerns, particularly those of unhoused people.
Yeah.
I guess one of those is a former city council candidate who ran, I don't know if he's with you, but you guys seemed to be, you know, pretty congenial and collegial. Ron Pomerantz. Did you chat with Ron about why he decided to keep these meetings closed?
In his inimitable manner, was not really clear why he wanted to keep the meeting closed. He just seemed to think that there was some business that we should be conducting and not in the public eye. I wasn't really certain what his position was. It was not very clear. I mean, when we get Tash Nguyen on the board, who is a prospective board member, when we get Daniel Etler on the board, who is a prospective board member, I think the dynamic will change, because I think that those are not only voices that are sympathetic with social causes and the homeless particularly, but people who would be able to open that board up to, you know, more thoroughgoing, you know, examination and participation. So we're just going to have to, you know, wait until those folks show up and become members.
This is Daniel Etler. Is kind of, he's the fellow we had on. Dennis Etler, I'm sorry, is a fellow.
Daniel Etler is Dennis's son. Daniel does Food Not Bombs and any one of a number of, you know, he was participated in Occupy, has been a very, you know, progressive for young guy voice. And, of course, Tash Nguyen, as you know, with Courtney Hansen, were the founders of Simbara. So these are people we want to have, I want to have on the board, and they have been nominated, and all they have to do is show up for a couple meetings and they're on. So until I can get them to actually come to the board meetings, which they've really agreed to do but have had other conflicts recently, it's going to be difficult to shift the dynamic, but we'll just keep working on it.
Well, I mean, I commend your objective, Steve, no question about it, but And you're working on a variety of boards in hopes of getting some kind of progressive change. You're on the scoreboard. I guess Dennis Etler is on that board, right?
Dennis, a new member, yeah. We're really trying to, you know, generate some awareness in the community about racial injustice, that kind of thing. But as you know, I mean, it's tough sledding, and not everybody has an open mind or open ears for that kind of thing, and you've experienced that yourself in the past. So, you know,
sure.
We just have to keep doing what we can.
So, again, I regarding SCORE, have you, I suggested this to Dennis, and maybe he will be taking this issue up, have you found out what happened to those disappearing complaints of when SCORE actually was founded? They began with this huge publicity about many, many, you know, send in your complaints about the sheriffs and so forth.
Right.
And racial profiling. Are they still, you know, in the files gathering dust? Have they been discarded? Were they acted upon and we never heard anything about them? What happened to those?
Well, you know, we'll find out. I think Dennis, you know, has some energy to want to, you know, investigate that, particularly because he's new to the board. I think if we can get kind of, you know, Simba, you know, re-energized and moving towards actually, you know, reopening those cases, we can get something going. One thing that we did do of interest at the ACLU meeting was that it looks like we're going to look into mounting a challenge to the new median strip law.
I mean, a legal challenge?
Yeah, mounting a legal challenge. We're looking at the law, looking at whatever other ACLU chapters have done, and then once we can get the legal theories framed properly, it looks like we're going to move forward, take the tickets, and then actually mount basically some sort of challenge that we wanted to mount to the 647E violations in the Occupy. It's basically a complaint and then a preliminary injunction and then a hearing. But Bob Tiern is very interested in representing. I've volunteered to take some tickets, so I think that's something that we're going to be working on.
Now
and
that's
the board is,
that's you. Bob will be representing. Bob is talking about representing in both 647E and this.
No, not the 647. We're just going after the median strip law.
And explain for folks what this law is.
Well, it's a new ordinance that was passed by the city that makes any kind of activity on any median strip in the city unlawful. And apparently, it doesn't matter whether it's just holding a protest sign or standing out there with, you know, a sign that says, you know, buy Bob's used cars, or whether it's some homeless person who's out there panhandling, which is, as you know, a constitutional protected activity. The subtext is that it's an attack on homeless folks. The grander design is it just simply restricts people from doing anything on median strips, and we think that is a civil liberties problem.
And you say Bob Tiern, long time, I've known him as more of a disability lawyer, but he wants to take this case, and you're going to be doing the research on it maybe, or it's a little unclear right now what's going on with it?
Well, what's going to happen is that Bob has been doing the research on this, has been looking at it, and actually even Peter has been consulting the Northern California ACLU to see if they are aware of any other similar either challenges or median strip laws that we can kind of base our challenge on. But there's real activism around this, so I'm hopeful that, you know, it's at least one opportunity to challenge, you know, an unjust city ordinance and a necessary city ordinance, and one that, as you know, is targeted against homeless people, so there'll be that point made as well.
What about racial profiling? That's an issue that's been big in the news with the Trayvon Martin slaying. Has the ACLU expressed any concerns about, you know, dealing with racial profiling in Santa Cruz, or has that just not been on the agenda?
We've been engaged in challenging the racial profiling that goes on with the Secure Communities Program for the last 2 years. In fact,
I'm sorry, with the what program, Steve?
Of our pressure on the sheriff, as well as the Immigration Action Group and some others. He has actually changed his assessment tool, and then so not quite so many non-criminals are being deported. But that's clearly racial profiling, and we're
aware
of that, and we have been working on that for a couple of years.
Right, but of course Sheriff Wowak is still going his own way on that issue, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, he's an independently elected officer, so we can only, you know, urge him to do the right thing. If he doesn't do the right thing, then no one has any supervisory authority over him. The Board of Supervisors do not dictate how he runs his department. They do determine how much funding he gets, and that's one of the things we tried to backdoor is to go to the supervisor and say, well, why don't you
What about racial profiling for American citizens who are African-American or dark of hue or whatever, Latino?
Well, you know, I mean, there are so few, as you know, African-Americans in the city of Santa Cruz, and the countywide, they're only about 1%. So yeah, that's something that really, if the ACLU, if the NAACP would engage on that and express some interest, and they have been kind of trying to mobilize a little bit more here recently, then we would be more than happy to join in. But there just hasn't been any focus on that at all. I think that's really where that has to come from, and that we can certainly be in solidarity with that.
In other cities, as you know, mostly larger cities with ACLU, it actually is probably more radically influenced, and you know, by groups that are, you know, much more directly everybody's directly impacted. But the famous sleeping ban that makes it illegal for people to sleep after 11 o'clock at night in a city with shelter for less than 5% of the homeless population has been directly challenged in Santa Barbara, in Los Angeles, in other cities as well. And with the ACLU's involvement, yet in Santa Cruz, and I know you don't have attorneys, there's been no, even a statement from the board saying this is a violation of people's rights. Do you think that the same majority that refused to open its meetings would also refuse to acknowledge this as a basic civil right on the ACLU board?
Well, I think they acknowledge it as a basic civil right. Whether or not you can mobilize them into any kind of an action or making a statement is another thing entirely. I mean, I can urge them all I want to make statements. You know, I had to twist arms just to get him to make a statement in support of the Santa Cruz 11. I had to twist arms just to get him to make a very bland statement in opposition to the curfews that were just imposed at Cowles. You know, those are the kinds of things we're trying to do. You know, a statement in support of the homeless voter rights after the homeless voter rights was already dead on arrival. You know, those kinds of things, you know, we try to do, and I try to urge them to do, but they don't seem inclined to take that principled, courageous stand as often as I would like to see them do.
You've heard my cynicism about the ACLU from a year ago when you were attending, in those good old days when you were attending Huff meetings.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and now you've had a year on the ACLU, pretty much. Some have suggested, I among them, that simply people try to form a different organization that actually is concerned with these issues, and as a sort of, if not for something, you know, to be dealt with in a fancy and an expensive legal way, but at least to make policy statements about it and to mobilize community opinion on it and issue educational papers on it. And
well, you could certainly do that, presuming you could get the critical mass to do it. I mean, it's easy enough to say that, well, let's form a Santa Cruz Civil Liberties Union and break away from the American Civil Liberties Union. I might even be in support of that. But, you know, could you get anybody to actually do any work on it? Could you get anybody to actually do any kind of outreach or community awareness? You know, and what
those are good questions.
Would any letter from that organization have if it didn't have any standing in it?
What's coming up? We're talking with Steve Plaich, who is, so should I still give out your number, Steve, for people?
Sure, of course. Yeah, I just had a legal service client call today.
466-6078, if you haven't changed it. Is that correct?
No, I haven't changed it, absolutely.
466-6078 is Steve's number. That's Plaich, not Platch, Plooch, or Plotch. Well, there is another Plaich up in, as I think I've told you, in Scotts Valley that spells their name considerably different than you. In fact, you might consider changing the spelling of your name. It's Pletsch. Have you considered using that as a new spelling, perhaps?
Perhaps as a nom de plume or something. Anyway, I've got another meeting that I have to attend, but I'll be talking to all of your listeners very soon.
Sounds good. Last question for you before you go?
Yeah.
You're in a vehicle yourself, and I've heard there's considerable hostility to vehicle dwellers up at the Circle Churches. How's that going with the ISSP program and the people in that neighborhood?
Well, the ISSP program is doing very well up there, but as you know, those folks are just sheltered within the church rectory itself. There's been quite a bit of flyering of vans and RVs over there by the local neighbors to kind of drive on any of the campers away, which when I was still living there a month ago was very successful because they drove just about everybody away. Better to talk to Julie Shaw, our good friend Julie, who lives in her motorhome as well, who has more experience with kind of being around the Circle Church more than I do. But it's not a good atmosphere at the moment. Steve, who feels the umbrella pastor over there, has done the best he can, but he's just getting a lot of flack from the neighborhood. So anyway, I got to go.
Thank you, Steve.
Talk to you later.
All right, man. And there goes Steve, surprising me again by actually calling into the show. If you go online, you'll read some of my, what I call it, pluses and minuses around Steve. He's again running for city council. He's run twice before. I'm told by friends and political allies I should not be criticizing so strongly people who are, as you can hear from Steve, very sympathetic and active on a lot of issues, which to some extent I share, a large extent I share. I'm troubled by, you know, these kinds of concerns. I have doubts about, you know, myself when I do this too, but I tend to believe that positions of power and the belief that one can influence institutionalized power through, I don't know, infiltrating from within is kind of illusory. I'm not always. There's no hard and fast rules. It depends, obviously, on the institution and the extent of the corruption or the calcification. But when I see... Well, I've talked about these issues before with Steve in the past at the ACLU, trying to, not bringing up specifically issues to the ACLU board around homelessness because he is afraid that he will be voted down. I would say, why not be voted down and then raise the issue? Well, there are actually a number of suggestions that others have made as to how to essentially embarrass the ACLU if it does take these negative positions. But, there's obviously the other road is to try to stack the board with your members or encourage those who are on the board to change their mind through different kinds of things, ranging from protest to persuasion. Or you can, as I said, try to form an alternate organization, which I've often suggested the people who are interested in the ACLU should try to do rather than spend time with ACLU. But as you can see, even I spend hours and hours on this organization, on this subject, instead of wising up. Maybe Anna DeFranco will wise us up, or at least cool us off a little bit. Call in if you'd like, 427-3772 if you have any thoughts, and we'll talk about those thoughts, if we can somehow link them into general civil rights issues that I kind of am concerned about. Or if you have any updates, 427-3772.
Okay.
just me. If it was just me.
Annie DeFranco for was her rendition of what was it? Well, let me take a closer look. Yeah, Mariachi. So you're tuned to the stream of Freak Radio, our free radio, and it's at freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris, and the name of the show is Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides. If you want to call in, you can, 427-3772. It should be on July 25th that you call in, because otherwise you will be calling another show. Well, perhaps you might want to do that too. Who knows? On Sunday, the NAACP and sympathizers concerned with Trayvon Martin's killing or murder, as many would believe, were doing a march through town denouncing that and denouncing racial profiling. I'm going to play some of the audio from that and some of the interviews I did, and probably do a little commentary as well. I made some remarks online at the Santa Cruz Indie Media website, where Alex Drozzi did some great photos there, as he usually does. And there was some, I got some controversy from another activist who was concerned that I was too critical of the NAACP's, for me, apparent silence on the specifics of local racial profiling in the last two decades, which I've lived here and, you know, I don't go to NAACP meetings, but I do read the papers pretty regularly and try to keep my ears open, and there hasn't been much that I've heard. And as Steve Plaich has pointed out, it's a small, really small African-American group here in Santa Cruz, and it's but it's, you know, I mean, the town has 60,000 people, and 1% is 600 people. That's a lot of people, and that's a certain number of people. And I've gotten repeated reports from African-American homeless folks of discrimination at different times because of race here. And I think it's an important issue locally. I always, you know, raise these issues as a local matter, because I'm concerned that groups like the ACLU, that they're willing to push for a statements about support AB 5, the Homeless Bill of Rights, at the state level. They're not interested in oppose the sleeping ban, which is probably the most obvious constitutional violation and criminalization of homeless people and of a basic homeless need in Santa Cruz locally. Even though all they have to do is issue a statement that they oppose it. It's a civil liberties violation. You know, they don't have the money maybe to oppose it in terms of a legal response, but they can at least make a statement, but they don't. And even so, forthright a person as Steve Plaich has felt afraid or disinclined to bring the issue up to a vote, even to show that the ACLU is apparently consists of either sellouts or cowards on this issue, or people badly misguided or confused, or people who don't give a shit. I don't know. But in any case, people who will not take a stand on this issue. And so I had the same questions about other organizations. That includes the NAACP. But I was, you know, really pleased to see people out there marching and speaking out. And again, there wasn't much about local racial profiling. There were some signs, as well as mine. And there was some discussion. You'll hear some discussion by some of the organizers of the protest who gave me some some interviews. But I had hoped that they would come on the air and talk about some specific cases that have happened in the last decade or two, or some problems that they have with the police department or the sheriffs or other organizations around here, so we can get particular. Because unless you get particular, you can't address these issues. You know, and I took some flack for that from at least one activist, and he certainly has a right to his opinion. I continue to have my opinion, and well, let's hear what the opinions of the people are on the march. That's important, too. Obviously, very important. They're willing to get out there and show their opinions.
I is doing some reading.
Before we actually begin this, apropos the fact that I'm talking about racial prejudice, this is a bit of a lyrical poetry by the Lyrical Eye, Isaac Collins, who was really, I think, a strong example of racial profiling a year ago when he was the only individual arrested among the thousands of people up at the Great Meadow at 420 at the marijuana smoke-in, and then prosecuted on felony possession for sale charges of candy with marijuana in them being allegedly distributed or sold to people in the Great Meadow, who were puffing away big time. So let's hear some of Lyricalized poetry and then hear a bit of the tape from the march.
All we wish, if we can vote for Obama, they can have someone like me in city council. I've been in Santa Cruz for 7 years, and I wrote more poetry than I can probably count. I rocked many open mics when there was no such thing as an open mic, but I was there on the streets getting something for free. I've been here for 7 years, showing kids what hip-hop is. Not by the diamonds or the shoes we wear, but how we care about the earth's resources and how we care about everything we live for. I've been in Santa Cruz for 7 years, trying to respect women as queens. Not sexual object, as these men will see. These men will learn from this creativity as they see today. I've been in Santa Cruz for 7 years, respecting my elders every single way I can. Some may sleep on the streets, get harassed, but I take off my hat and salute them because they give me inspiration to come out in these streets and give something that will last for the next generations to carry on. I've been in Santa Cruz for 7 years, getting on my knees, praying to the lonely tribes, and every single time that I performed, I did it live. I was waiting for someone to just listen to someone like me that had some creativity that was free. I've been here for 7 years, fighting, protesting, using my creativity as something that you never heard. But I was just like my friend Colin. But I was out in the streets a little bit more than he was. I've been here for 7 years, performing, writing, using poetry as something that makes you make enlightened. But I wasn't reading off the script. I was using my poetry that's connected to my grandmother that sits in heaven and saying, son, you're doing something positive. I've been here for 7 years, loving, gathering, meditating, inspiring every single person that walks by. Some of y'all might think I'm a preacher, but I'm a lyricist, and I keep it live. I've been here for 7 years, changing conditions, showing love to the ones in Florida and all across this world. My inspiration is to those boys and girls that needed me to put smiles on faces. I've been here for 7 years, trying to find out who my friends can be. Some might be my friends, some are not my friends. It's okay, because we're all friends together. I've been here for 7 years, reading books like Frederick Douglass and Allen Ginsberg and Jack Kerouac and Gil Scott Heron. But they don't talk about Gil Scott Heron enough. I've been here for 7 years, getting on my knees and overcoming my fears. So that's an improv poem.
That's Lyrical Eye, Isaac Collins.
It's not written. I just decided to do a poem about 7 years, because I've been in Santa Cruz for 7 years, let people know that I'm the only poet that comes out and does this. There hasn't been no poet that's done this enough. And when they do come, they know who I am. So this next poem is Teachers. It's by Quentin Mars Cotting. This book was given to me by my grandmother, which is deceased. So rest in peace, grandmother.
So I'm now leaving. It's 6:05, the demo after a little Lyrical Eye. Whoa. So it's about about 2 o'clock on July 21st. I'm here at the protest against the Zimmerman verdict and the murder of Trayvon Martin. It's on Maple.
That's Trayvon Martin, to my embarrassment. I kept mispronouncing the name. My apologies. There you go.
Street, right here at the edge of the Loudon Nelson Park. I'm counting 10, 20, 30, maybe 40 folks here. And people are making signs, civil rights, everyone's rights, Santa Cruz NAACP, NAACP, justice for Trayvon Martin.
Trayvon Martin.
There's a sign-up list. There actually are a few black faces here among a predominantly white crowd. Count at least 8 or 9, and they're mostly all women. And there's Isaac Collins, of course. So Free Radio Santa Cruz wants to know, what brings you to this rally?
Well, I guess a feeling of outrage at the verdict. In 63, 50 years ago, I was in Texas doing sit-ins in restaurants and stuff like that, working for civil rights when I was a student at the University of Texas. And, you know, it's just really hard for me to believe that gun rights trump civil rights. And, you know, so I guess that's all I have to say.
Are you a longtime Santa Cruzan?
No, actually, I live in Monterey County.
Came up for the protest?
Yeah.
Well, that's good. I only saw 5 people here 20 minutes ago, so it looks like people suddenly appeared.
Yes, people are appearing.
And actually, I was at the wrong location with 4 or 5 other folks. It looked like a very small crowd about 20 minutes before, but actually they were gathered on the other side of the park. Also, I missed some of the main speakers that began this rally. And for those who want to hear some of those speeches, I encourage people to go to Santa Cruz Indie Media to check out the stories that are there. I guess there's one long photo story by Alex DeRosi. And in one of the comments that I've left, I link up the YouTube video, which has been put together as a collage of some of the different speeches that were given before the march began and before I arrived, and then some of the speeches that happened at the town clock, as well as pictures of the rally on Pacific Avenue.
Yeah, I wish there were more here. I think it should be a massive protest.
Well, we know there's no racial profiling in Santa Cruz.
No, not at all, but...
Never, not a chance.
Well,
please treat everyone equally here.
But it
equal
is,
oppression.
You know, as a white man, I don't feel any oppression, and so I don't see it. It's like President Obama said in his speech the other day, you know, women don't clutch their purse and shake in the corner of an elevator waiting to get off if I step on.
Mm. You're talking about President Drones R Us Obama?
Yeah, he is disappointing, isn't he? In a lot of ways.
No, I quite expected that what I was going to get. It's the people who voted for him who are disappointed.
Well, I voted for him twice, and
I am. Silly boy.
Well, would the alternative have been better?
The alternative would have given you a Democratic opposition in the Congress, and they couldn't have done what they're doing.
Hey, I'm not sure the Democrats in Congress are much better than the president.
They're
most
worse, but if they aren't in power, they'll say they are better.
Yeah, well, that's true.
When Obama gets into power, he does.
So what radio station are you?
Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Okay. What is your number?
Oh, I'll give you a card. It's 101.3, although we are... here is my card.
Oh, okay.
Who are you? For our FBI records.
My name is Smitty. I live in Prunedale.
We'll keep an eye on you, Smitty.
Okay, take it easy.
All right. So, we got a couple of younger people, not many. There's one dog I'm counting, a black Labrador, perhaps, and there's a woman with the sign, Black Lives Matter. My son is Trayvon, and he's a man on a bike. What's your name, sir?
My name is Isaac Collins, or known as Lyrical Eye, the professional poet and lyricist.
Now, you haven't experienced racial profiling here in Santa Cruz, have you, Isaac?
I haven't felt it, but it's there.
Nobody walked into a crowd to arrest you and pick you out among thousands of other people, did they?
Yeah.
Weren't you, in fact, arrested a year and a half ago at the Great Meadow and charged with felonious marijuana possession?
Yeah.
Aren't you suffering from the consequences of that charge now?
Not anymore, because I gave the money.
You gave the money, but you're still on probation, though.
Yeah. But
so we got to keep our eye on you because you're one of those questionable people. After all, you have the dark skin color, you know. No fault of your own, but that's just how it goes.
Yeah, but you know, you're living, you know. I can't. You know,
Race. Let's talk about it. Ask me. So if I were to ask you, what would you say? Are you going to run into a rap here?
I'll say, just love us who we are, be human beings. Keep it going, but naturally as the dream. Don't hate me because I'm me. It's beautiful like Frederick Douglass, harder to see.
Hey, thank you, Isaac.
You're welcome.
So we are in Maple Street, moving forward here. And what brings you to this rally?
I have a grandson that I care very much about, and he's 2 months old, and I want him to live in a healthy society that doesn't racially profile people.
But you're white. Why should you? You have nothing to worry about.
Oh, I have a lot to worry about. Yeah.
And what's your first name?
Renita.
Thank you, Renita. And your sign says, Craven, we will work for change on your behalf. Renita, Sierra, and River, those are your children?
That my daughter is right over there. She has a baby. And that's my grandson, River.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, keep up the good work.
Thank you. I will. You too.
So the march is beginning on the sidewalk. So we have an anonymous skateboarder here who is lurking off to the side. I won't reveal his identity at this time. Join us! Join us! And some of us are just having a difficult time staying on the sidewalk. Hey, hey, join the gang! Join the gang!
Justice for Trayvon. Everybody repeat this. If you can hear me say, we're going to chant justice for Trayvon. If there's someone in the crowd that feels comfortable talking to this thing and got some words, hold your hand up and I'll pass it on.
Hear, hear. Oh, I didn't get it.
Where I was offered the megaphone, I said, oh, no, thank you. you know, more of a reporter and a interviewer than anything else here.
How's it going?
No one has anything to say? So my sign says, what?
We shall not be moved.
Everybody know that song? On three, yeah. Hit it.
You start.
We shall not
be moved, just like a tree that stands in by the water. We shall not be moved.
Great singing, of course. And we walked down the streets, down Maple, and then down. I think we skipped over to Pacific Avenue. I'm not quite sure at what point we did. Singing these old spiritual songs from the 60s.
So much for my pronunciation. 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 40. Maybe 50 folks in the march. Alex steps into the street to take a photo or two. But the march is in an orderly procession on the sidewalk, moving past the Calvary Episcopal Church on Center Street.
Okay, just a second.
Now it says civil rights, murder, 1963, 2013, why? What is your name?
Kathy Kress.
And have you been doing this? Are you a professional agitator?
No, I'm just a white woman who has, from 1963, been protesting civil rights. And I'm shocked that here I'm a grandmother with 10 grandchildren. And I'm still doing it over the Civil Rights Act being turned down and over this, you know, needless, horrible murder of this young kid.
And are you a Santa Cruz resident?
I live here in Santa Cruz. I've lived here for 30 years.
And what about racial profiling in Santa Cruz? What have you noticed?
I think it happens here, too. I think it happens everywhere. And probably the police department is taught not to do it. But I think it's just so hardwired into ourselves that it's hard to escape it. I've never seen it, but I know anybody with a hoodie is going to be stereotyped and is a metaphor for trouble.
Do you have much contact with African-Americans in Santa Cruz?
I do, Brenda. So that's why I said at the beginning, this is a lily white community. And my friends in the Obama campaign that I worked for, there were a smattering of African-Americans, a huge amount in San Jose and over the hill. And it's sad. Really sad. So, no.
So you take it you're not terribly happy with Obama's droning, bombing, and assassinating campaign?
No, I'm not happy with that. But I do accept that just all the regular old lines. He came into this with a lot against him. I think he's gotten through what he could possibly get through. The droning, I don't know. I think he's just fallen into the wrong company. That goes with Wall Street, too. So
you're still supporting our fear, in other words, so to speak.
He's fallen in, let me listen.
The evil ways?
Timothy Geithner at Now Nauseam with Wall Street, and as far as the Defense Department, I'm even shocked that Panetta has done what he's done. But, you know, he's just perpetuating the whole terror campaign, which means you really aren't against anybody. You're afraid of everybody. That's very much like Trayvon Martin. You're just afraid of the person who's dressed in a hoodie.
And we've been talking with
Kathy Kraft.
Thanks, Kathy. And Pacific.
Take a moment. Think about that.
And we have a total of 10, 20, 30, 40. Looks like 70
cousin.
Or 75 folks now. Daryl Darling, Black River Woman. Bruce Van Allen with Buttons. Joined. Black is not a crime, although it seems to be a misnomer. It actually is a crime. So stop racial profiling and justice, civil rights, everyone's rights. As we pass the American Apparel and Miss Jessie Mays Antiques and Collectibles and Jewels on Pacific Avenue, all across from the family-owned Zoccoli's Deli. And the folks outside of Verve look up from their computers and their groups briefly before returning to their coffee. It's about 2:20. What if Zimmerman were black is one of the signs. Trayvon is everybody's son. Black Lives Matter. My son is Trayvon. Peace and justice, says another sign of a woman with a walker. There's white-haired Daryl Darling, looking good. Barbara Riverwoman is here, talking to Bruce Van Allen. Hey.
Bruce Van Allen is a former mayor of Santa Cruz. Many years ago, 1980 or thereabouts, a little later, 81, 82, 83. No other city officials were in this march that I could see. And again, a lot of the people that I interviewed are all these people making excuses for Obama. But, you know, it looks like, hey, sentiment's slowly beginning to change, maybe, although it's really hard to pry the Obama loyalists away from their lesser evil fantasies.
I shall not be moved. Yeah.
In Santa Cruz.
Now the announcer says here, we gather at the town clock for a prayer. All right, a quick interview with you, NAACP organizer. What's your name?
My name is Deborah Hill Alston, and I am the current president of the local NAACP branch 1071.
And how long have you been the prez?
4 years. This is my second, my two-and-a-half term, you could say.
Any instances in Santa Cruz of racial profiling that have come up over that 4 years?
Yes.
And what's been the outcome? Any names we should be remembering as well as Trevor Martin?
Well, off the top of my head, Trevor is the only one that's there right now. I'm going to try to focus on that.
I appreciate that.
We've gotten lots of complaints, and we followed through with those complaints, and we got to speed up to catch this light.
Let's speed up to catch this light. So what have you been able to, what can one do to help with that kind of complaining process? Because here in Santa Cruz, people actually feel they might be able to have an impact.
You protest. You stand up. You speak out. Whenever there's an injustice, racial profiling, any kind of injustice, stand up and speak out. When people see you standing up and speaking out about something, then they're more apt to pay attention and to wonder about it and maybe be helpful with solutions. It's all about conversations.
We've been talking with?
I have talked to city officials. I've talked to many community organizations. I talk to anybody who will listen to me, pretty much.
Any success in dealing with racial profiling in Santa Cruz?
No.
How can we do? What can we do about this? A protest is one thing you suggested.
We have to get on the city council, places, entities like the city council. We have to get into government where the rules and laws are made. We as a minority or as black people need to infiltrate the structure in order to get some effective change. It's hard to change from the outside in, but if you can get in there, then change may be more effective.
How do you avoid becoming a, so to speak, Uncle Tom once you get into the structure, become a part of the game?
You tell people who you are and what you stand for.
And kick you out.
If they kick you out, then they have another problem. There's another person that's standing behind you that's not going to appreciate you being kicked out, so your list of supporters gets to grow. When they kick you out, they may kick you out, but they can't get rid of you.
They can.
You can come from different directions.
They can't keep you there.
That's right.
We've been talking with
Deborah Hill Allison, NAACP.
How can people get in touch if they want to help out?
Our meetings are the first Monday of each month at 517 Center Street, beginning at 6:30. The best way to help is to show up at the meetings and speak up and speak out in a timely fashion.
That'll be coming up soon because we're reaching the end of the month.
Yes. First Monday, we'll be at 517 Center Street, 6:30.
Thank you, Deborah.
You're welcome. Thank you. And you are?
I'm Robert Norris. I'll give you my card. You'll be on the radio on Thursday evening.
I'm on the radio?
You're on the radio, woman.
Well, you got to call me in for a personal interview.
All right, I will. You give me your number and I will do that.
All right.
I feel like we've already gotten a personal interview.
Well, you know, there's lots of things I'd like to say. And I like to try to put them in order in a different context. Because as we're walking and all this emotion is going on, I got so much to say, you know, it can get jumbled. And I'd like to be a little clearer.
We'll do that.
Okay.
Bradley's trying to get the guy with a large KB home, beautiful new home sign to move to the other side of the street.
And that was, according to her self-identification, the head of the local NAACP, Deborah Hill Alston. I haven't heard back from her, and I haven't been able to, I thought she gave me her number, but I'm having trouble locating it. So if anybody has Deborah's number and they want to give me a call, 423-4833, wants to talk about, you know, the issues that she wants to discuss, which is local racial profiling, which she says nothing has been successfully done about it, which I think is, gives me hope that we have at least a woman who has a clear view of what's happening. Although, you know, I don't know what, for 4 years she's been president of this organization, you know, I want to talk to her more. She seems accessible, and she obviously knows more about the specifics of a lot of these probably more middle-class instances. I've gotten accounts of people, you know, who are from the streets, but not so much from people who are middle-class folks. So maybe that'll be coming up in a subsequent show. It is 8 o'clock or shortly thereafter, and I don't know if we're going to have a new show. It may be that it's time to put on an older show for Uncle Dennis fans, from the cream to the dregs. I think I'm going to take a look at that. I think we may be doing that shortly, in fact, very shortly. I want to give Uncle Dennis his full 3 hours, or most of it anyway. Let's take a peek here and see what he's got available. He's been notorious for having old shows that keep playing played over and over, but I think that's changed. Let's see what we've got here. been sort of, well, they still look like pretty old shows. But heck, I'll, I guess we'll try to throw on one of them old shows. Here's a, boy, this is going to be a real old show. This is the Boys Show from July of, 2007. And it looks like I just erased everything else in the Winamp. Thank you very much, Robert. So this is going to be coming up. We'll be coming up with Uncle Dennis from The Cream to the Dregs. You've been listening to the Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides show on the stream July 25th, 2013. And that was the March last Sunday, which was on the, let's see, it's Thursday the 25th. So it'll be the 24th, 23rd, 22nd, the 21st. Or thereabouts.